This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Coming today, we'll hear from Mike Berto, Chief Healthcare Economist for Blue Cross Blue Shield Louisiana. He'll comment on the remaining uncertainties about the Affordable Care Act, with litigation now being pursued in some states. Also, Mike Berto on how the state budget chaos might affect healthcare services in Louisiana. And journalist Shane Snow is with us. He'll discuss his book, Dream Teams. Snow analyzes why individuals consistently outperform teams. Why do so many partnerships and groups break down? And why do a select few break through spectacularly? This from journalist Shane Snow. Now the news on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Your numbers are 877-217-5757, wherever you are, and 297-5633 in the Baton Rouge calling area. You can send an email to talk@talklouisiana.org. Hope you had a great weekend, and we start our week with Mike Berto, Chief Healthcare Economist for Blue Cross Blue Shield Louisiana. A week from today, Louisiana lawmakers will go into yet another special session, the seventh one since January of 2016, and this is, of course, June of 2018, so less than 2.5 years and 7 special sessions. The budget chaos continues. At this point, there is no solution to the fiscal cliff, which happens in 19 days. Mike Berto is with us to talk about much, and healthcare, of course, is dependent upon state and federal expenditures to some extent, but does the budget chaos really affect what's going on in your world?
Well, uncertainty is never a good thing. We have plenty of clients who are part of the state budgeting process, who buy insurance from us for their members, for their employees, and we want them to feel comfortable about their revenue streams, just like, you know, any other company would.
877-217-5757. As we know, the Affordable Care Act has been under attack. It came within one vote of being voted out by the United States Senate not so long ago, with John McCain providing the decisive vote the other way. Both U.S. senators from Louisiana voted to get rid of the Affordable Care Act as we know it. Has it stabilized, or is there still continuing uncertainty?
Well, as long as the administration seems to stay on this course of trying to help people find escape routes from the risk pool that the Affordable Care Act wanted to build, there's going to be some uncertainty, there's going to be some instability. It kind of goes all the way back to 2012. You may remember in the summer of 12, there were lawsuits that were filed against the Affordable Care Act that basically said that Congress didn't have the authority to tax you or fine you because you didn't buy health insurance. And at the end of the day, the Supreme Court said in a very narrow decision that because Congress's taxing authority was essentially unlimited, that they had the ability to tax you for the absence of health insurance. So the fact that you weren't participating in a health insurance program was means justified them taxing you. Well, now that Congress, back in December, said that the individual mandate penalty, that tax, as the Supreme Court called it, is now reduced to zero starting in 2019. So next year, there'll be no tax associated with not buying health insurance. About 12 or 15 states got together and said, well, that tax was the pillar on which the ACA was built, so now the whole thing, guarantee issue coverage and all of that, needs to go away. It's a real long shot. The legal experts I'm talking to don't give it a lot of hope, but it seems an odd time to launch an attack on guarantee issue coverage with an election coming up, you know, midterms coming up in just a few months. So I'm very curious to see by the end of the summer how strongly that particular lawsuit is going to get pushed.
Well, the Blue Cross situation in Louisiana is such that you represent well over 1 million people, right?
Yes, yes.
Okay, so a lot of people depend upon Blue Cross, and when you take out those who are already on Medicare, we're talking about a sizable portion of the population. And when it comes to the Affordable Care Act, it's you and one other provider, correct?
Yeah, the individual market right now, there's Blue Cross and there's Vantage Healthcare on healthcare.gov on the federal exchange, and that's it. Statewide, those are the only two companies participating.
Do you think with the mandate going away, and you have noted there are already so many loopholes that in many ways it's already gone away to a large extent, but with it officially going away, apparently, that this will potentially devastate the situation to the point where Blue Cross can't stay any longer, or is Blue Cross in for the long haul?
We've always been in for the long haul. Remember, the mission here is to improve the health and life of Louisianians. And that starts with making sure they have access to the most affordable insurance coverage we can get our hands on. That individual marketplace is very important to our business. We hate to see it being pushed and pulled in 30 different directions at the regulatory level. It seems like since 2010, it's been under constant attack one way or another. But, you know, we're trying to drill through that and get down to the humans who are actually using their insurance and buying it and using it to get health care they could never afford to pay for on their own. And trying to figure out the best way to defend them is our business strategy. Louisiana is our only territory, so it's not like we can pull up stakes and go look for higher ground somewhere else. We're here to defend Louisiana's market.
Well, Louisiana, under any subsidized health care plan, would stand to benefit perhaps more than other states per capita because we have more poor people and we have more unhealthy people.
No doubt about it. In fact, I wrote a Straight Talk article about 3 weeks ago about the cost of diabetes alone and pre-diabetes to the marketplace here. And, you know, we talk about our budget problems and our fiscal cliff, so we need another $800 million or another billion to balance the state budget. Last year, we spent somewhere north of $5 billion in Louisiana just taking care of people who have diabetes. $5
billion. $5 billion in Louisiana?
Just in Louisiana. The national number was $300 billion of costs driven strictly by diabetes. If we don't get our arms around this problem and start helping people understand the trajectory they're on, and that we're not talking about people who were born diabetic. We're talking mostly about type 2 diabetics, people who essentially self-inflict diabetes on themselves over the course of their life by eating the wrong stuff, by not exercising enough, by not getting enough rest. That's the battle we're in right now.
877-217-5757, Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Phil, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana. Hi, Phil.
Hi, Jim. You know, I believe the polls that I've seen, like 70% of the people in the United States are very supportive and want some health care reform that works for everyone. And I understand that the Republican Party is trying to destroy it because Obamacare is such an evil thing. How would it be if there was a single payer system? How would that affect your business? And don't you think that it'd help if everyone had their own policy that started out from birth, like the Social Security system?
Well, Phil, I'll tell you, I am a huge proponent of every human in the United States having their own Blue Cross plan. I don't see any reason why they shouldn't. We're engaged. Our blue plans nationwide are engaged in Medicaid programs serving the poorest of the poor. We serve seniors through Medicare Advantage, and we serve people throughout their life while they're employed. So, yeah, I think the blue plan model, especially the not-for-profit blue plan model like we have in Louisiana, would make a great basis for a national health insurance program. I'm all for it.
Thank you, Phil. 877-217-5757. So single payer, would that change the environment to a large extent, or would it be largely the same?
Well, it's sort of a thought exercise and a bit of a dream right now, but I want you to consider some of the things I think about when people talk. We have debates all the time about single payer. So one of the suggestions in Congress right now, the Dems are pushing a program called Medicare for All, where they take Medicare and open it up to larger sections of the population than just older folks. There are some problems with that. Number one, the Medicare program as exists from the government has significant gaps in coverage. That's why people tend to buy private plans to wrap around their Medicare to get the financial protection they really need. The other thing is Medicare pays doctors and hospitals significantly more than Medicaid does. So if you start to move people in the Medicaid program over to a Medicare for All, you're going to have to find an enormous amount of money to pay their health care bills. So there are pretty significant hurdles to making anything like that happen. It feels good to talk about it, but the obstacles are gigantic.
877-217-5757 for Mike Berto, Chief Healthcare Economist, Blue Cross of Louisiana. Mike in Lafayette. Hello, Mike.
Hello, Jim. Hello, Mike. I'm looking at some numbers from the Wall Street Journal. I'm sure you've seen them, and I think it would just be worthwhile to hear you pontificate on them a little bit. Wall Street Journal in 2017 in January cited most expensive 5% of patients spend 49% of the healthcare budget. Most expensive 50% spend 97% of the budget, meaning 50% spend less than 3%. And that's a $3 trillion budget with about $10,000 for every man, woman, and child in this country. If I'm wrong, tell me I'm wrong. If not, try to explain it.
Thank you, Mike.
Oh, certainly Mike is not wrong. The sickest among us, the people with the most healthcare needs, absorb large chunks of the healthcare dollar as it's spent. Some of the things that we try to think about is we now have a department here at Blue Cross where we've hired some very, very bright people from IBM's Watson project, in fact, who are building a predictive analytics model so that we can let people know ahead of time how likely it is they'll end up in the hospital. Imagine if I could call you and tell you, in the next 6 months, there's a 70% chance you'll be in the hospital. You need to fix this and this and this to avoid it.
We'll talk about the predictive analytics. Mike's gotten it so scientific, he can tell you if you're headed for the hospital or the morgue. 877-217-5757 is your number for Talk Louisiana. We're back after this time out on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. Pleased to have you with us for Talk Louisiana. Rebecca Dill is producing today, and our guest for a while longer is Mike Berto, Chief Healthcare Economist for Blue Cross Blue Shield Louisiana. He's held that post, I think, for about 15 years now. And of course, the healthcare landscape has changed, but in Louisiana, we have lots of bad habits, and our life expectancy is lower in the state of Louisiana than it is in the rest of the country. And as a whole, the United States has a lower life expectancy than many other countries, some of them underdeveloped. I saw a few years ago, Cuba actually had a longer life expectancy than does the United States of America, Cuba. And Mike in Lafayette a few moments ago, Mike Berto, said that 50% of the people are using 97% of the healthcare costs, they're expending it. That is true. And also, I would suspect that as individuals, we probably spend more in the last year of our lives than we do at any other point in our lives. Isn't that just a factor that when you get sick, you're going to need care you didn't need before?
Absolutely. And, you know, it's instructive to me, if you take a look at the way money moves through the healthcare system, you can kind of get a feel for what causes stress, why insurance is so expensive, why healthcare is so expensive. So if you take a look at Blue Cross last year, we're a pretty good analog of what the whole system looks like, because we cover probably a third of the people in Louisiana are walking around with a Blue Cross card in their pocket. So last year, about 37 cents of every buck that we took in ended up paying for an inpatient hospital stay. So if I'm going to make a serious attempt to slow down healthcare spending, I really can't avoid talking about hospital stays. Likewise, our drug spends have gone from around 11% of premiums 10 years ago to 25% now. So if I can't get prescription drug spending under control, I'm going to have zero success controlling the price of healthcare overall.
877-217-5757. There is still time to talk with Mike Berto, who I think knows more about healthcare than anybody I know, and probably knows more than just about anybody in the United States. He follows every intricacy, and as you know, this is a moving target.
Yeah.
Also, you can send an email to talk@talklouisiana.org. John in New Road says, God rewards the faithful with wisdom, not cash money. You cannot buy your health. Why do I have to pay for the sins of others, Mike Berto?
Ouch. Well, You know, the we can go back to Lloyd's of London if you want to talk about paying for the sins of others. But essentially, we've been using an insurance model in the United States for different ways of sharing risk for many years. I mean, if you want to share risk with people, you're probably not going to have a lot of control over how they spend their life. My goal is, how do I educate that population? If you're in a pool of 1 million people, how can I make them smarter about how they live their life? People want better quality of life. I really believe that. I think at some point they either don't have the data they need to achieve it, or they don't have the willpower to achieve it. And if there's a way we can figure out how to give them both, why wouldn't we go down that road? And so I was talking earlier about predictive analytics. You know, building a forecasting model that can let people know your health habits and your current situation have put you on a trajectory that's headed for, in all likelihood, an inpatient hospital stay. What if I could call you and say, if you want to avoid going to the hospital, here's 3 steps you can take now to get that done, involving, of course, your primary care doctor. Do you have a good relationship with him? Can you pick up the phone and call the guy? Heck, we have Blue Care now, which is 24-hour-a-day healthcare online. You don't even have to go see your doctor if you don't want to. You can see him on the web. You can see him on your phone. Mm-hmm. You can see him on a PC. So there's no excuse not to get the data at this point.
Sometimes people don't want to know, though.
Oh, there's no doubt about that. You know, I think as a cancer survivor myself, 35 years now, I can tell you those first few years after my diagnosis and my treatment, I had to go back for checkups and get scans, and those scans are terrifying, because you've been through hell to get well, and you don't want to go through it again. So there's always that fear. But I think as a community, we owe it to each other to give them the support, to give people the support they need and the right kind of advice and counseling so they can deal with their health and show them a way out. This is how you fix it. This is how you correct the problems.
Well, there are a number of people who are morbidly obese. Somebody in that situation might think, well, there's no hope. If I lose 20 pounds, what difference is it going to make? How do you answer people like that?
Well, a year ago, one of the people that we work with told me, a clinician doctor told me, he said, Mike, if you can lose 10%, actually he said 7% of your body weight, you'll cut your risk of diabetes by 50%. 7% of your body weight would cut my risk of diabetes by 50%. So I lost about 10 or 12% of my body weight, and all of my numbers are starting to self-correct. My blood pressure is getting better. My blood sugar is getting bigger. Now, that's a small step. Even if you're morbidly obese, losing 20 or 30 pounds does make a difference. It's the step in the right direction. So don't minimize that. It's really important.
So if you're a man and you weigh 200 pounds and you lose 7%, that's 14 pounds.
That's it.
Okay, you can cut your risk by 50% for type 2 diabetes. If you're a woman and you weigh 150 pounds,
right,
that's about 10 and a half pounds. You go to 139 and a half, and the incidence of type 2 diabetes is cut by 50%. 877-217-5757. Doug on Corsi. Doug, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning. I'm joining you late, so I don't know if you already talked about what's being done to the Affordable Care Act, but it's certainly worth mentioning that, you know, folks may need this broken down for them. Millions of people are going to lose access to health care that they have now if what they're doing is carried through. And this idea that they really would go in and remove the coverage, you know, for pre-existing conditions. A lot of folks may not believe they're serious about doing that, but I think they are. And I'm someone who's benefited from that because I was rejected before the Affordable Care Act for private policy insurance because I have back problems by Blue Cross, by Humana, by all the others, and had to get on the state high-risk pool. They weren't that serious back problems, didn't require surgery, but I was rejected, and I had to get on the state, had a high-risk pool for people who couldn't get insurance otherwise. Since the Affordable Care Act, I've been able to get policies for half of what I was paying at the time that I did get the individual policy. So I think, you know, this is something everybody needs to realize is happening with all the other things that are happening that take our attention.
Thank you, Doug.
Yeah, he's absolutely right. Since 2014, we've been involved in, I'll call it a grand experiment. Every single time that a state or a federal agency tried to create an individual insurance pool where they covered everything and let everybody in, it's failed. It's absolutely failed because they could never keep enough healthy people in that pool to defray enough of the cost to make it affordable for everyone. That's why he ended up in a high-risk pool, because the people who were involved in the other insurance that were healthy didn't want to pay the rates that he had to pay. We'll have a similar circumstance here. We'll end up with a pool on the ACA of people who are the sickest among us and are paying very high costs for their insurance, and the people who are healthy get split off into another pool where they pay lower rates if we continue down the road we are now, where we're talking about short-term medical health plans, association health plans, and the lawsuit that's been filed by those states we mentioned earlier.
David in Atlanta. David, you're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, gentlemen. The Republicans' attorney generals have a lawsuit making its way through the court system to declare Obamacare unconstitutional because the tax, the individual mandate has been rescinded, therefore making it a tax, thus unconstitutional. That's their argument. This would go back to days when people with pre-existing illnesses can be denied. What would that do to insurance rates for how many millions of people? And Bernie Sanders may well run again on a platform of Medicare for everybody.
What about insurance rates if Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, is shelved?
Well, for the people who can pass underwriting, the people who don't have serious health conditions already, who apply for these new plans that could come out, their rates could be half of what rates are today, maybe less.
Half?
Half. For the people who are already have health conditions who will have to stay in the ACA pools, the rates will go up rapidly, and it'll become more and more dependent
Double.
On federal subsidies.
Triple.
No way to know that for sure. No way to know.
877-217-5757. One more segment with Mike Berto of Blue Cross Blue Shield Louisiana. You're listening to Talk Louisiana. Back after this pause for the news. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757 is your number. And you can send an email to talk@talklouisiana.org. Mike Berto, the chief healthcare economist for Blue Cross Blue Shield Louisiana, our state's largest health provider, is with us to talk about all the intricacies of healthcare and insurance. Dan downtown. Hi, Dan. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Hey, Mr. Berto. You mentioned the decisions made in an election year. Seeing that the Republicans figure they'll lose the majority in the House anyway and need to push through as much pro-corporate America and anti-consumer legislation and regulation, like doing away with net neutrality and insurance for pre-existing conditions while the getting is good for them?
Was there a question in there? I'm sorry. I missed what he asked.
All right, Dan, do you have a question for Steve? Or excuse me, for Mike?
Yeah, he mentioned about the decisions made in an election year. And my question is it seems that the Republicans figure that they'll lose their majority in the House anyway and need to push through as much pro-corporate America and anti-consumer legislation and regulation, like doing away with net neutrality and...
All right.
Okay, I got him. I'm sorry, I missed
Thank
it
you,
there
Dan.
First time around. I would never presume to read the Republicans' mind on what they think they're going to get done or accomplish going forward. Right now, I'm very focused on two things. Number one, I have two regulations that are about to be issued by the CMS, by CMS and the IRS and the Department of Labor, that could potentially shake up the health insurance market a lot. One of them is on short-term medical insurance, allowing insurance carriers to sell a health plan that doesn't meet the ACA requirements, that can be underwritten, and let people keep it for 364 days. Right now, the limit is 90 days. 90-day plans are not really a viable substitute for ACA-based insurance, but a 364-day plan certainly could be, and it could be sold to people who could pass underwriting for much lower rates than what they could get on the ACA. The second thing is something called the Association Health Plan Regulation. Both of these should be dropped any time now. Association health plans would allow individuals and companies to form loose associations just to offer each other health insurance across state lines or in central geographic areas with very little regard to existing federal law. It's almost it's an escape route, essentially, from the ACA. Mm-hmm. And that can push even more uncertainty into the marketplace. And so I need those regs in my hand as soon as possible so I can evaluate them. Both of them could have big impacts on the market.
Your numbers again, 297-5633 in Baton Rouge, 877-217-5757 anywhere else. Janet in New Roads. Janet, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana with Mike Berto.
Good morning, Jim. I'm a military retiree, as is my father, and I have been reading the articles in the paper about Medicare possibly going, running out of money within the next 10 years. I'm 63 years old. Right now I'm still on TRICARE. When I turn 65, I will be transferred over to Medicare. So if Medicare, in fact, runs out of money, what happens with all of these military retirees? Are we simply dumped out of any kind of insurance coverage? And do I need to start thinking about some other kind of policy other than Medicare?
Oh, okay. Great question there, Janet. First of all, it's important to understand that the money that you've been contributing out of your paycheck for your entire working life is going into the Medicare Trust Fund for Medicare Part A. Medicare Part A is the part that pays when you go in the hospital. Medicare Part B is the part that covers your doctor visits and everything else. That's funded by a congressional appropriation, plus it's funded by the money you pay for your premium every month. And then, of course, Medicare has Part D, which is drug coverage. The trust fund is only for Part A, and what it means is they will have to subsidize the Medicare Part A more with money from Congress. Now, there are a lot of ways that that can get done, but I would not worry about anybody getting kicked off of Medicare at this point. Especially military and retirees, thank you so much for your service across the board to us. It's important to understand that Congress has no higher responsibility right now than to make sure health care is delivered to seniors. And I always feel like that'll be a top priority in everything the government does going forward. Jim, you're old enough to remember the old Dan Rostenkowski thing when they proposed some little trivial change to Medicare Part A, and he was Speaker of the House, and he went home to Chicago, and some seniors chased him down the street with canes and walkers. And, I mean, there's no politician in the world who can afford to ignore the plight of seniors under Medicare.
I think he was chair of the House Ways and Means Committee.
There you go, yeah.
Steve Wynnum, the former budget director in St. Francisville, says, I'm more impressed with Mike every time he's on Talk Louisiana. Aww. I wish the state could afford to hire him as its DHH secretary. His candor and lack of bureaucrat ease are truly impressive, as is his knowledge.
Oh, guys, you're singing my song right there. Go to straighttalkla.com, and you'll get a lot more of that unbureaucratese view on our healthcare system and how it works and what's wrong with it and what we can all do to fix it.
Dave in Shenandoah. Dave, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana. Hi, Dave.
Yes, sir. How y'all doing this morning? Look, I'm just wondering if there was an incentive for the health insurance is to build in an HSA to attract the younger folks to the healthcare market that do not want to get insurance, and most of the time it's because of the high deductibles, where that would be an incentive to have a lower deductible.
You know, I'm a gigantic fan of health savings accounts. I've had one for 14 years, and I think it is absolutely the best way to get people engaged in their health and to fund health care. But for some reason, when the HSAs were approved back in the early 2000s, there was a large block of opposition against the creation of the HSAs, and so they put a ton of restrictions on the kind of insurance that you can mate up an HSA with. It's not just that that plan has a high deductible. There's a big list of federal requirements that you have to check off every box before you can pair a health savings account with a high deductible health plan. And loosening that up would be a great idea. I personally think every American ought to have access to an HSA if they have any kind of legitimate health insurance. It's a great point.
Thank you, Dave. 877-217-5757 as we head down the stretch with Mike Berto. Shane Snow is next. Mike, Gretchen asks, how does this predictive analytics works? Do you plug a lot of numbers into a database? how does it work?
Let's see how straight talk I can be about how predictive analytics works. But it's basically this. Because we pay the health care claims from millions of people every year, we have an enormous amount of information about what ails them and what they've been through and how they're suffering. And we can use that information to look for specific variables that match up, that indicate it's more likely you'll have a hospital stay. Now, it's not usually one variable. It might be 9 or 10 different things we can look at. It might be your weight, your height, whether you smoke or not, where you live, what your income levels are. All of these things, when they're put together in the right mathematical formula, will give an impression, a mathematical impression, of how likely you are, how much you have in common with people who've already been in the hospital. And so by using that data and using those different variables and different weights, we can figure out which ones are the most likely to send you to the hospital. And at that point, our obligation becomes, because we care about these people, reaching out and letting you know these are the things that are making it more likely for you to go.
All right. Well, yeah, it does. So what is the biggest culprit to good health in the United States? Is it obesity? Is it smoking? Is it lack of exercise? Is it poor diet?
Yes.
Is one more prominent than the other?
Well, I think we've kind of created what I call this devil's triangle of bad health that we all engage in from time to time. Number one, we have easy access to calorie-rich foods, which, you know, humans historically have not had that access, and we use it. Number two, increasingly, we're creating a job market that rewards people for sitting down, for spending more time behind a desk or behind a computer and exercising the muscles between their ears, but not so much the ones below their waist, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the second part. And the third part is we still have a high prevalence of use of compounds that add to our health dilemmas. Tobacco is a gigantic thing still. 20% of the people, 22% of the people in Louisiana use tobacco on a daily basis. Think about that, 1 out of 5. And we've known for 70 years that tobacco is a huge contributor to negative health, but yet we still are engaged in that and other behaviors. So it's easy access to bad food, it's easy access to good jobs that pay well where you sit on your butt all day, and it's access to foreign compounds that we continue to ingest in our body. I think if we could get a handle on those three things, we could solve a raft of health problems.
But 50 years ago, when we as a country smoked much more, we weighed much less.
We lived way shorter lives. You might go back and look at health expectancy, you know, life expectancy in the 60s. And, you know, I watch a lot of old movies, right? And I'm a huge Turner Classic Movies fan.
Yeah.
And I'll see a star come up with an enormous amount of talent, and I'll inevitably pull up my phone and Wikipedia what happened to him. Died cancer, 60 years old. Died cancer, 57 years old. It was very, very common back then.
Well, smoking is probably, if you do it, the biggest culprit of all. But it is fair to say, I think, that people who smoke sometimes weigh less than those who don't. And when people give up smoking, often they gain weight.
Well, that's something that you've got to battle. But hopefully we can figure out a way to help people stop smoking and maintain a healthy lifestyle.
Matthew in Lake Charles. Hi, Matthew. You're on with Mike.
Hi, Mike. I have a question about, I often hear either a single-payer system or, on the other side, going to a completely private healthcare program, neither of which I see as particularly feasible, at least for us. I never hear any moderate approach, as in, like, a Medicaid for all.
Okay. Every type of one-size-fits-all health plan is going to have obstacles. The biggest one for Medicaid for all will be most docs and hospitals out there lose money treating Medicaid patients. End of story. Okay. So if you put everybody on Medicaid, you'll have a very cheap system with a lot less healthcare capacity. Fewer docs, fewer hospitals, and long waiting times.
We'll be calling on Mike Berto again soon. Thank you, Mike. We're back after this pause. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us. Rebecca Dill is producing, and we round the stretch with Shane Snow. His book is Dream Teams, Working Together Without Falling Apart. Shane is a veteran journalist, primarily in the science and business world. He's the co-founder of Contently, one of Inc's fastest-growing companies. and his writing has appeared in places like The Washington Post, The New Yorker, Time, GQ. His first book, Smart Cuts, has made him highly sought after around the world as a speaker on innovation and lateral thinking. This book is about why individuals sometimes exceed the performances of teams, often so, and why sometimes the best teams are more than the sum of their parts. Good morning, Shane Snow.
Good morning.
Well, why do so many partnerships and groups break down? Why do just a select few break through and sometimes break through in substantial ways?
So it boils down to chemistry, right? When we talk about human chemistry, we're actually kind of talking about the same thing as cooking or any other kind of chemistry. It boils down to the ingredients and how they interact. And a lot of how we, I guess, our common wisdom around working together in groups, whether it's, you know, a partnership or something personal or a company or a community, a lot of sort of the common wisdom we have is either outdated or it's based on basically how our brains are built that don't really help us out when we're working in a 21st century context. So there's a lot of little things that lead a group to be normal, which is, you know, kind of what usually happens. We get slower as we get bigger. Sometimes we fight. Or a group to make spectacular breakthroughs, which is how we've kind of done everything in history that was marvelous, is when people put their heads together and actually became smarter and greater than any one person in that group.
But individuals do often outperform teams, and with that as the backdrop, should we accent trying to formulate good teams?
Well, so that was one of the surprising things I found in this exploration is most of the time you're actually better off if you can work by yourself. You're not going to get smarter than you, and you're going to be better off than that if you get a lot of, you know, diverse inputs into your process. You actually do consult other people and you know, become widely studied. But, you know, brainstorming groups, for example, they've done tons of research where you put a bunch of smart people around a table and say, come up with ideas together. And any idea is a good idea. You know, don't hold back. Same group of people will come up with fewer ideas and fewer good ideas together as they will by themselves if they just add their own lists of ideas up. And this has to do with, you know, group dynamics and needing to belong and kind of subconscious things that happen in our brains. But sometimes that group of people will actually together come up with much better ideas. It's just most of the time when we say two heads are better than one, it's not true.
Well, usually when we think of teams, we think of athletics. At least I do. And you note in your book, Dream Teams, that at the height of the Cold War, the Soviet Union and the collective nations known as the West competed over everything from politics to technology, chess, math, going to space. But there was one arena in which there was no competition, and that was hockey. The Soviets owned that one. And what happened?
So if you remember that movie that was based on the Olympics in 1980 called A Miracle on Ice, right? It was when the underdog U.S. team beat the Soviets for the gold medal. And it was called a miracle because not because that U.S. team was so great. I mean, they did a great job. But because that Soviet team never lost. They went decades and decades without losing any international championship. They, you know, they'd won four golds in a row, and they won the next two golds. It was a fluke when they lost. And that team is so fascinating because when you look at the individual players, they're all great hockey players. They've been playing since they were kids, but they weren't the best individual players in professional hockey. You know, Wayne Gretzky was better than any of them, and yet when they came together, they beat Wayne Gretzky every time. And the most interesting part of that story is this hockey team, you know, this dynasty for decades and decades, they rotated in all these players and they never lost. When the Iron Curtain came down and they could finally go play for the NHL for real salaries, they all got these huge salaries, these huge offers, and they got split up among all these NHL teams, and they didn't do very well. They actually kind of sucked. And then a few years later, the coach of the Detroit Red Wings quietly gathered a bunch of them up, and he put five of them back together on the same team, and he said, I don't need a playbook. You don't need a playbook. Just do whatever you want to do. And then they destroyed everyone. And for 3 years in a row, they were the best team. And so it was like, you know, fish being back in the water together. It showed that there was something magical about what they had together that they couldn't quite capture in other contexts.
A listener, Tracy at the Capitol, notes that President Trump is often thought to spark rivalries within his own inner circle by pitting employees against one another. Tracy asked if that is a productive way to inspire teams and teamwork.
You know, it doesn't appear to be, but there's something there that's interesting. You know, great teams push each other. They have what's called cognitive friction. They bring different ideas, different points of view to do battle with each other. What you don't want is that, you know, battle of ideas to turn into something that's personal, where your goal is to, you know, to further your own personal career, to sort of climb the ladder or destroy the other party, which is often what happens in these kinds of rivalries. But there's something very interesting that you see over and over again in history, and there's a lot of kind of science behind it, that conflict does breed kind of the best out of us. The Wright brothers, for example, were famous for these daily arguments where they would get really heated when they're working on a project. But then what they would do is they would, at lunchtime, they'd quiet down and eat their sandwiches, and then after lunch, Orville had to argue Wilbur's side and vice versa. So they had to let go of their need to be right. They had to depersonalize it. And this is a little trick they did where they could sort of amp up the tension and play with ideas in a much more interesting and sort of friction-y way without it devolving into getting personal. So I think, you know, looking at the Trump pitting people against each other, there's something there, but it's not quite hitting the mark if it's so personal.
Well, right now we're seeing this play out in legislatures, both at the federal level and at the state level. Here in Louisiana, we're about to go into our seventh special session, primarily because two sides can't get together. They can't compromise enough to get the job done. Is the path to some kind of a consensus, is it narrowing to the point where consensus is no longer a good thing, or at least not thought to be?
So consensus, if you have too much consensus, then you're probably leaving potential on the table, you know, potential solutions to problems that no one's thinking of, right? You're kind of plateauing. Is the intellectual humility to revise your viewpoint, to change your mind when you have those arguments? And I think that's the thing that we need to get back to with our elected officials, is have the debates, have the arguments, but then actually acknowledge when there's a third option that we can do, rather than seeing changing your mind as weakness.
What are some of the mergers that have worked and others that have not, when we're talking about dream teams at massive levels?
So I looked at the stats, basically, of why so many company mergers fail. And it turns out that the same underlying reason why most mergers fail is also the biggest leading indicator that a marriage is going to fail. And the best example of this that I found and I wrote about is Daimler and Chrysler, two giant car companies in the late 90s. They became the case study for failed mergers. Basically, these two huge companies, they had complementary things that they could do together. You know, Daimler was really innovative and had these great cars like Maybach and Mercedes, but they had very hard time squeezing profits out of the company. And Chrysler, on the other hand, they made great family vehicles and they had big profits, but they weren't known for their R&D or innovation. So they put the companies together, and then a few years later, instead of becoming greater together, the new company was worth less than either company was before the merger. And the reason this happened, they thought it was going to be culture conflict. You know, the Germans, the Americans not getting along, which is what, you know, the research kind of blames failed mergers on. But it turns out it's actually the fear of that conflict and not engaging in any kind of meaningful conflict that killed the company. They had what was called organizational silence, which basically means they didn't talk about the real issues. So they didn't mix the two employee bases. They didn't ship people from Germany over to Detroit. The two CEOs hardly talked to each other. They tiptoed around. They didn't want the conflict, but they tiptoed around everything. And this is the same thing that happens in marriages. It's not the arguments that indicate that the marriage is going to fail. It's when you stop talking, when you stop engaging in discussions that are important, or, you know, you just back off and don't communicate. And that's what happened with Daimler and Chrysler. And it was really sad. A lot of people lost a lot of money and a lot of jobs were lost. Whereas other mergers that I studied actually leaned into the conflict itself between ideas. They recognized and they pointed out the elephant in the room. They said, hey, we now have two companies that are very different, have to work together.
Well, Shane, thank you so much. The book is Dream Teams, Working Together Without Falling Apart. Shane Snow takes us on an adventure through history, neuroscience, psychology, and business to reveal what separates groups that simply manage to get by and those that get better together. Until tomorrow, thanks for listening and stay tuned.
For a podcast of today's show, go to WRKF.org or find the Talk Louisiana podcast on the WRKF app. We welcome your feedback and topic suggestions. Email us at talk@talklouisiana.org. Talk Louisiana is a production of WRKF in Baton Rouge.